Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
You ready, Jay?
I'm ready.
Phil, you ready?
I'm ready, Tim.
I'm ready.
All right, boys.
Should we do this then?
Okay, pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod!
It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. The Holy Trinity are reunited following JB's honeymoon. How was it? Oh, sorry, scouting trip to Italy.
Yeah, it's good. I don't know how you ever expect to eat paleo over in Italy, but yeah, it was a good old trip.
But they're always looking kind of all right, though, aren't they? So what do they eat? They must just not eat much of that.
I don't know. They don't all look great, Tim.
No.
I tell you what, if I see one more building which is 2,000 years old, I might shoot myself. But look, it's 2,000 years old. Guess what? It's all 2,000 years old.
You good, though? Glad to be back?
Yes, delighted to be home.
Yeah, and here we are, podding once again. We are here, just like the rugby squads up and down the land, we are working axes to the grindstone. We are putting in the hours, putting in the shifts to make sure that by the start of the season, we are a tightly honed podcasting machine.
Indeed we are. Indeed we are.
As you just demonstrated then, Tim.
Yeah, we have
a well-prepared podcasting machine.
Jay, we missed you last week.
We did.
Yeah, I missed you guys. Although I must say, landing back in the UK, one of the first things I was greeted to, and it's one of my pet hates, is a policewoman. I mean, obviously, that's unsafe as it is. With a full sleeve tattoo.
A police woman with a full sleeve tattoo.
A full sleeve tattoo, and she's in short sleeves. Do they not understand?
Wow.
Anyone can be a police officer, it seems now. Anyone.
Well, in previous podcasts, we've voiced our displeasure at the sleeve tattoo on rugby fields.
So, yeah, exactly. Oh. Go and play for Bath.
Right, listen, Jay, there was a couple of things from last podcast, and thanks very much for everyone that's got in touch. Regarding stuff we talked about on the last podcast. What we're going to be covering off this week is a couple of bits. We've got a wrap-up from last week. We're going to be looking at Super Rugby, which is getting to the semi-final stage. We've got our one-man 15 thing, which is at its semi-final stage. We've got Rugby Films, which is a brilliant thing JB has suggested. And then we're going to be having a little look close-up on a couple of the clubs in the Aviva Premiership and give our thoughts about how they're shaping up. That all to look forward to. But we missed Jay last week. And Jay, you can settle a couple of arguments here.
Happily.
Firstly, me and Phil were talking about the relative merits of London Welsh and Newcastle as we approach the new season.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil said Newcastle are down.
Okay.
I said I think London Welsh, despite the number and quality of some of their signings, I think they'll still go down. It was quite funny, Gordon Ross said to the media this week when asked about London Welsh, he said, well, we're hoping for a top 11 finish.
Fair play, Gordon Ross.
Quite a good way of putting it. But how do you see that going? So you've got the casting vote on this then, Jay.
I know how I want it to go. I mean, I've been waiting for Newcastle to get relegated since I started watching rugby, and they finally get relegated and they come back up, which is upsetting in itself. Obviously,
Hi to all our North East rugby fans, by the way.
No, I don't share that sentiment. Well, London Welsh is one of the proudest clubs in the history of rugby. Was one of the biggest names in rugby in the 1970s,
and
1960s.
And
exactly, yeah. With a rich and proud tradition. Whereas Newcastle scavenged the bones of two clubs which combined. It's got a windy patch of mud up in the northeast and doesn't offer anything. So out of the two of them, I want London Welsh to stay up, and I want Newcastle to go down.
Well, you say they've got a patch of mud in the northeast. They're going for an artificial pitch like Saracens.
They need one. It's a horrible pitcher.
One of the stories that's emerged this week is they are. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Darlington's going to host the Sevens.
That's a
in
nice
Newcastle.
Stadium there. They might think of moving to there. You know.
Well, no. They're getting an artificial pitch. Exactly.
Have
the
they
same
thought about
Saracens?
Building like fences to stop the wind? I mean, that would be my first call.
Well, I mean, one of the problems they had was their style of rugby and their lack of ability to score tries, and this is clearly an effort to try and change that.
Yeah, so...
To try and win people like you round, JB.
No chance.
Do you think they'll start playing really expansive, free-flowing rugby now that they've got this artificial pitch?
And Alassana Tuolangi on the wing. You want to get him the ball, don't you?
Well, yeah.
I know you're hoping Newcastle go down, but who do you think will?
I actually think Newcastle a little bit too well coached to go down. I don't think it's going to be London Welsh either.
So where do you? What we're doing is we're putting them in position. Mm-hmm. So currently we've got Northampton second, Quins fifth, Wasp seventh, Sale eighth, and London Welsh and Newcastle. We're trying to decide who goes 11th and 12th.
If you told me to just line them up in terms of who has the most talent, you'd probably say Newcastle would be last. However, I think what will probably happen is one team will have a horror, like when Harlequins went down, like when Northampton went down. I've just got a sense of it. I just think Newcastle might be a little bit too well coached to go down. I think London Welsh has spent too much money.
Wow. Oh, wow, that is a curveball. Wasn't expecting
something
that
like that.
Well, that's as clear as mud.
Yeah.
It might be Sale. Who knows?
Well, listen, all right, we'll let you decide on that. Rugby Podcast on Twitter. The second thing we need to talk about from last week's podcast. Banter Squadron! So we have Nick Cummins, the Honey Badger, in Banter Squadron. We have Donico O'Callaghan in Banter Squadron. We have Joe Marler in Banter Squadron. And we need it to be ratified and agreed by JB. Me and Phil are in agreement that Nigel Owens deserves to be in Banter Squadron for services to banter. Mm. Services to just being a thigh-slapping good chap and upholding the values of the game of rugby union.
I think even more important that he's in there because he tweeted us.
Yes, that is true.
Let me just recap that. A word of last week's podcast and his nomination for Banter Squadron got to the man himself, Nigel Owens, who listened, tweeted, said, "I haven't listened before, I like it."
Yeah.
Sorry about the accent.
That's
I apologise, Nigel. It's good, boys.
I don't really know. About Nigel Owens. I mean, he's not driven a golf cart anywhere. Has he pissed in his own mouth?
He's an international referee. There's lines you can't...
There's lines you cannot cross. That's like saying, he's a senior accountant, goddammit. He should be in. International referee doesn't automatically qualify for Banter Squadron.
But the banter does.
I think there's a different set of rules and criteria you have to judge it upon. It's in relation to other referees. Is there anyone else who... in the heat of battle on the rugby pitch and off the rugby pitch and on Twitter and things like that.
He is quite funny. But the other thing, though, is on his Twitter account, he says he's a stand-up comedian. Do you know that?
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, I've looked across. He's a stand-up comedian. I said, I've looked for some of his stand-up.
Maybe that's after he heard the podcast last week. He changed it.
Yeah, he thought, yeah.
But come on, let's just recap. There was the Benetton Treviso game where the guy took a dive and he gave it, you know, nice little funny one-liners about it not being football. Get up. And then he did the same thing in, was it Ulster, Leicester? No, was it the Heineken Cup match?
Leicester-Ulster.
Leicester-Ulster. And then there's the couple of tweets that he sent, just when someone was mocking his sexuality and stuff, rather than have a go back, like some rugby players have done on Twitter, he was very funny and charming with it.
I'm going to tell you exactly what I think of this. And when he sent that tweet, I thought, yeah, okay, relatively good tweet. What I didn't like, however, are all the people passing themselves on the back, going, "You go, well done, Nigel," and like ticking off their liberal brownie points because they're so open-minded. I like the tweet. I didn't like the little backslappers, which must be feeling really good about themselves. Well, I didn't like that. Well, but the other tweet,
Alan Partridge, me and Phil read his tweet and thought.
This is great banter.
Been dying to use that.
However,
the semi-tweet was very funny, and I actually laughed out aloud at that.
Just recap that one. That was
Brazil would have had a more enjoyable semi if they watched Brokeback Mountain. I think that's much funnier.
Yeah,
that is much funnier.
That is good. They're both good.
First one's okay. I mean, is it okay?
So what
second one's excellent.
What would you say if me and Phil are in agreement? Nigel Owens deserves to be in Badger Squad.
I'm sorry. But if... What's his name from Rugby League the week before last couldn't get in? Who truly deserves to? I'd have to say no. But it looks like I'm being overruled.
The guy who bubbled in his own mouth.
Yeah, I can't think of it.
That's different.
It's definitely different.
That is different.
I'm going to have to say yes, aren't I? I'm going to have to say yes.
Nigel Owens, you were officially recognised as a member of Banter Squadron! Well done, well done, well done.
This is great banter.
Let's
that's actually Tim's ringtone.
let's move this on. Okay, right. Well, we've had some people asking about pre-season training on Twitter, and it is that time where lungs will be bursting and the weights will be being shifted in the gym, and you know there'll be loads of stuff happening at military bases trying to test the mental strength of rugby players. So,
same for you guys, you're going to love this.
So I thought, what do you remember or know of pre-season? Because none of us, this is probably the first year that none of us are actually engaged in a rugby pre-season.
I went to pre-season.
Oh, you did?
Tuesday, Thursday. Just to catch up with everyone, see how everyone was, and ended up running around the field. Our pre-season's been miserable. But in the past, did you go to the ones where they made us run around the pitch? 10 laps of the pitch, followed by 50 squats every time you complete one lap.
I do remember
horrendous.
That.
Doesn't sound
that good for you. Well, I mean,
it's not
very specific to rugby, is it?
Exactly.
Because when do you ever run 300 metres?
But it's very specific to running around a pitch 10 times and doing 50 squats.
You'll improve at that. You won't improve at rugby.
Pre-season baffles me, especially when you've got... we've got a very dynamic coaching team. At Broughton Park, which still believe in that kind of thing.
It's not that bad.
No,
it's bad for me.
The ones that I hate, but I think are really good for rugby. Because let's think about it. When you actually think about rugby, what you need is to be able to recover quickly and then work at a really high intensity. That's the game of rugby, isn't it? So the ones I always remember hating, but actually you feel the benefit of it, is when, say, you have 3 minutes to complete a work, however many laps or different exercises or whatever it is, and then the quicker you finish it, the time that's left is your rest. And of course, so your rest gets less and less each time because you're fatiguing.
Agreed. I think it should just be more sprints and stuff.
You end up there's always someone puking and you're hanging out your ass.
That stuff is the best because it's kind of a bit of a trade-off of how do you work, the more rest you get.
Short sprints, that kind of thing.
We did it a few years ago where we were timed doing it and then everything was like recorded and graphed and you could see who was working harder, so who was like whose times were good, but also who was dropping off quicker. So you do 10 20 meter return runs, each one of them timed, and then you'd actually be graphed compared to everyone else over the time. So that's quite a good way of
Didn't you tell me another part of that story about your tired prop? Phil said all these things were up, all the times for, I think it's 400 meter times. And it's 400 metres or whatever it is, I can't remember exactly, but how many laps of the circuit. And it like have the quickest guys at top and bottom, and the tight head prop, it just said, completed.
How much do you reckon, because I've done it where we've gone off to a military type base for this team building stuff, and you would go out and whether it's you get a load of bikes and you cycle up a mountain or you go for a massive long walk or whatever. Some of that, I reckon, it's not part of pre-season, I think, is not about the fitness so much as actually going, who's actually got the mental toughness to keep going when they feel absolutely awful? Because that I think, is important later in the season when you get to, in the 78th minute when you're 2 points down. That's those sort of characters.
Yeah, when you look around and like everyone's in pain, but everyone's getting through it, everyone's like pushing themselves to get through it for the team.
Me and Tim went to pre-season. Do you remember the high wire place?
Oh, yeah.
So we went to pre-season at a high wire place. We burnt probably 500 calories and then ingested about 5,000 in beer immediately afterwards. And I don't really know what kind of team building it did. The guy who ran it said the week before he had Stuart Fielding in tears because he had to jump off one pole and catch his thing or whatever it was. And then we got relegated. So that one worked an absolute treat.
Yeah.
We had one where we went up to Lake District on a Saturday. It was something like that, like a go ape thing. Had a barbecue, a load of beers, and then we got woken up at like 7 in the morning. Everyone's hungover. Got taken back to the go ape place, and there was these logs, these like basically trees that had been chopped down and everything stripped off them. And we had to lift them up, two men carry them up and down this like obstacle course, hilly obstacle course, 7 a.m. with a terrible hangover. It was awful. It was absolute killer.
Well, I think I might have the best pre-season for you. It was not quite a pre-season, but still. You heard of Camp Hunt Stalldred?
Stalldred.
Spelled S-T-A-A-L-D or A-A-D.
Go on.
Camp Stalldred. Okay, so I'll just read this. I was, you know, looking at what I look at usually, and I came across this. So, the Sunday Times in Johannesburg reported last weekend that naked players were crammed into foxholes and doused repeatedly with cold water, whilst the English national anthem and New Zealand haka were played over and over again. The newspaper alleges that they were also forced into a freezing lake in the early hours of the morning to pump up rugby balls underwater, and that servants tried to get out were ordered back to the water at gunpoints. The players were also reported to have been held to an oath of silence about what happened at the camp. That, oh, by the way, this is South Africa.
Yeah, the international team, South Africa.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that might win.
Wow. That's how the South Africans are preparing for the
2003 World Cup. Forced into a foxhole naked and doused with cold water.
Wow. That's something else.
Indeed.
Oh, that's trumped pretty much everything. Tom May did a column on the ESPN Scrum website, and he does a column every week, and he was talking about the pre-season training of London Welsh. And he was talking about, you know, it's the one time when, you know, you find it funny when someone, one of your teammates is puking. And I was thinking, no, that's like every Saturday night after a game, isn't it? But he went on and said, and it's one of those misuse of the word literally that happens, which is normally at the hands of Jamie Redknapp. Mm. Tom May in his column said, rugby is a tough sport. Players are willing to get beaten to a pulp week in, week out playing for their clubs. During my professional career, I have seen players literally in pieces having played a game.
I don't think of a player who's literally been in pieces.
Has anyone lost a leg?
Yeah, lost an ear, I guess. Lost a tooth.
Yeah. That must
Joe Worsley nearly lost a testicle.
Yeah, that's true.
That one still makes me cringe.
We could try, actually, for a future one, we could try and make a whole human body out of body parts that other rugby players have lost. that we can put together.
Yeah, so start.
Gordon Brown's eye.
Literally. Yes, Gordon Brown, literally in pieces.
So tell us what you're doing for your pre-season at your club, and we can share whether you think it's pointless or actually really, really good. Right, the semi-finals of Super Rugby have been scheduled now because the qualifying matches happened. There were some brilliant games over the weekend.
Reasonably high-scoring games. 14 tries between the two of them as well.
Wow.
That's what you want to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we watched the first game, which is the Brumbies Highlanders game.
No, Brumbies Chiefs game.
Chiefs, yeah. And I thought it was over, but about 30 minutes in, I thought it was over.
It's 22-3 up, scoring three tries and being all over them. Brumbies were all over the Chiefs, dominating contact, dominating the breakdown. Breakdown work was really impressive. And you just thought it was just going to be one-way traffic all afternoon.
Well, I think what the Brumbies are so—they're so slippery. It's like playing a bunch of eels on ice. I mean, you just—if you look at like Spate and
Morg,
of course, Kurundrani.
Yeah.
Who is the Leo Leofana?
Yeah,
they're all just hard to get hold of.
Yeah.
Spate is some player as well. In the first half, he had this awesome offload where he looks like he's going to offload it one way. Flicks the wrist backwards.
Without looking. Perfectly.
Isn't it interesting that it's sort of the inverse of the way you would rank the national teams to the way that the Super Rugby teams are the Australian teams are looking strongest.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think the Australian national squad now is looking
awesome.
I think they'll
if they get everyone they could get available in the squad and then out on the pitch.
Well, the guy that I love for the Brumbies is McCabe. And he never plays. But when he comes on, he tackles like granite. Just a really good player. And never plays. But if you had to say Folau to the Brumbies backline, and I mean, all the players that the Waratahs have, it's going to be, if nothing else, it'll be a terrifying backline.
Yeah, it will be. I can't wait for the Quad Nations or whatever it's called. What is the competition called again?
I don't know.
The Rugby Championship.
Rugby Championship.
What
that's it.
Terrible name.
Really, it's a really bad name. So we look forward to the semi-finals, which are, the other game as well, of course, the
Sharks.
Highlanders.
Sharks. Highlanders.
Did anyone see that?
Yeah, I didn't see it. I've read a write-up of it.
Oh, right.
Supposed to be another good game.
There we go, at the cutting edge. We're there every minute of rugby. We've
so well prepared.
Up, so you don't have to watch it.
Another good game, yeah.
So the semi-finals are because we were talking about the odd way that it's kind of on a ranking basis, whichever team. And I was saying on the podcast, JB, it's very much like NFL, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
So you have the wild card. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, the wild card round, which you've just had. And then who you play isn't predetermined. It's the highest ranked team. So that's the Waratahs will play the lowest ranked team that get through.
At least it's not as confusing as the Rugby League Club Call. That is hilarious.
I know.
Here we are. In the finest hotel in Wakefield, the Rendezvous, and the guys in suits, and they try and make it as exciting as possible. And they go, "We will play Wigan."
Right. So, what are the semis?
So this Saturday at I think it's 8:35 British Summer Time, we've got Crusaders versus the Sharks in Christchurch.
Oh, two Aussie teams going head to head then.
Crusaders.
One of the big points they always make in the Super Rugby games is how much of a difference the home advantage makes.
Mm.
But obviously in that semi-final, because it's Australia.
That is the semi-finals of Super Rugby, which are coming up this weekend. And there is another semi-final we need to talk about. This was started out as a crazy idea. I thought it wouldn't work. It's turned out to be absolutely brilliant. So well done, Phil, for that one. It's the One Man 15. To try and determine who could be argued to be the greatest rugby player on the planet right now. Who, if you had a whole team of just that player, would win a game of rugby? And we are at the semi-final stage, and the players that have made it to that stage, Phil, you've got the fixtures, the matchups. This is what we're going to discuss.
I listened to this.
Yeah, we've got...
I didn't agree with all your selections.
Tough. Too late, they're done. We've got Keane Healy versus Skalk Brits.
Ooh.
Brian O'Driscoll versus Manu Tuilagi.
Yeah.
Sergio Parise versus Andrew Sheridan.
It's quarterfinal stage.
How is Andrew Sheridan in this? How has he because possibly made it?
He drew Francois Tranduc, which was suggested by someone.
Let's just be clear. We only picked the names for this to draw out from suggestions. Now, maybe some people thought people like George North were too obvious to suggest, but that's what we did. We just did it by suggestions. So we have got something in mind. Listen to future podcasts where we could mop up some of the players we missed out, the likes of Jack Berger, the likes of George North. Anyway.
Whoever suggested Sheridan clearly went on the premise that you need the best scrummager from 2005.
So come on then, let's go through our matchups today and get from quarterfinals to semifinals. Remember, this is a team where 1 to 15, every player is exactly the same. They're all the same person. Who would win a game of rugby? Keane Healy against Shout Brits then.
Yes.
That's really difficult. I had Shout Brits winning the whole thing. Actually, Keane Healy could probably out-scrummage him. So that's a problem. That's a problem straight away.
That is a...
Keane Healy's no slouch around the pitch as well.
Well, he's not Shout Brits, though, is he?
Brits. He's not at the dancing feet of Shout Brits.
Shout Brits could move to the
centres. But then Shout Brits did get knocked over by Wayne Barnes.
Oh, yes. So... That's an awkward one. Keane Healy can't throw in. I doubt he could jump. Whereas I think... Shout Brits obviously can throw in. I think he could probably jump. I think he's probably light enough and strong enough to lift himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mind you,
I'd go for that.
If you're technically strong, you can lift your own body weight anyway, can't you?
Let's focus on the positives again.
If there's two of you, you can lift your own body weight.
But could you jump?
Let's focus on the positives. So the quick stepping, elusive running and counter-attacking play and all-round game
and
of Shout Brits against the pure power of Keane Healy. Which would win in a battle of those two characteristics, the positive.
Should we have a vote?
I say Shout Brits.
I say the relentless power of Keane Healy.
Well, it's not relentless.
Relentless.
It'll fade.
Not when he's got a full eight Keane Healy's on the bench as well.
I go Keane Healy.
Yeah.
Keane Healy is through to the semis.
Oh, Shout Brits would have smashed him as well.
Next matchup.
Brian O'Driscoll versus Manu Tuilagi.
Ooh.
This is interesting.
This comes down to the scrum as far as I'm concerned, and nothing more.
Yes. Now, it's interesting you say that, because I looked up and...
Manu's scrummaging stats?
Well, Manu's 3 stone heavier than Brian O'Driscoll.
Wow.
Which means his pack is 24 stone heavier.
But as Brian O'Driscoll has never taken a backward step.
True. He's going to. He's about to. All of them are.
All 8 of them.
There's no player he hasn't tackled.
Yeah.
Mm.
I know.
You trust him to bring down any player in the world.
I won't trust him to bring down Jonathan Davis. it's got to be Tuilagi. How can it not be Tuilagi?
Yeah. I think in the backs, they're evenly matched. But if he's Brian's yeah. creativity and all that would probably win it, but the pack, there's eight yeah. of them, and they're so yeah. much bigger and stronger.
I've got a question for you about Brian O'Driscoll. Has there ever been a player, and I don't know the answer to this, but it's just a speculative question. Has there ever been a player who's played so consistently, in selection-wise, at their chosen position? You cannot think of what I can only think of one time when he did not play 13, ever.
He played 15 for the Lions.
Yeah, he played 15 for the Lions against the President's 15 in Victoria. But that was the only ever time he's not. I'm sure that's the only time he's ever played out of position.
He made a huge point when he did get dropped for the Lions that was the only time in his career that he's ever been dropped.
Yeah,
he's started every other game that he's been fit and available to do so.
So if it was a battle of attrition over a 20-year career, Bod would win. But over 80 minutes, we say 15 Manu Tuilagi's would beat 15 Brian O'Driscoll's.
Here's what I think. Fair if Brian O'Driscoll gets the advantage in the back, which he probably would do, that might be worth two tries. But the pack is worth three tries.
Yeah, I go for that.
We're all going for Manu. That's fine. Next one, then.
Parise versus Sheridan.
Oh, let's just end this
right
now.
What's the point?
How are you here?
Congratulations.
Well done, Sergio Parise. You're through to the semi-finals.
And then, this is a great matchup. Kieran Reid versus Sean O'Brien.
Wow.
That's not a great matchup for Sean O'Brien, I think.
Wow, I don't know.
I don't know.
15 players like that.
Sean O'Brien,
6'2".
6'2".
You're always thinking of like line out and things like that, Jay. Don't worry about it. Let's think about the when you strip it back, Kieran Reid is a ball-playing, athletic...
He's got
powerful, intelligent rugby player. Sean O'Brien is an offloading wrecking ball.
Who can
incredible at the breakdown?
But who's going to scrimmage better?
Oh, evenly matched.
No, it's not evenly matched. How can they be evenly matched?
I think that low centre of gravity of Sean O'Brien in the front row would do some damage.
Yeah, of course it is. Sean O'Brien's a beast. What's he, 6'2", something like that? He's not a million miles away from prop shape. What are the respective weights?
Similar. Kieran Reid is 112 kilograms.
You know, we've missed some...
Oh, just the breakdown would be blitzed by Sean O'Brien. Choke tackles. Imagine eight forwards choke tackling Kieran Reid.
It'd be like if the WWE decided to do rucking practice.
But then I think the all-round game, I think Sean O'Brien would be limited. He'd just run a hard line at 12 and 10, yeah. and that's it. Whereas Kieran Reid, I think, would have the ability to... I mean, Sean O'Brien can offload and whatnot, but I think Kieran Reid would have the ability to chuck a missed pass in and exploit an overlap and...
Yeah, kick corners.
I'm really sure we missed a load of players here, haven't we? I'm sure we missed...
We know we missed George North.
No, it's a monstrous Maori back row who just we've completely overlooked or someone like that.
You could say players like Sivavatu with big slices like that would do all right. Or who's that Nemanja Nadolo, who's tearing up trees. He has torn up trees in Super Rugby.
Yeah, yeah. Julian Surveyor. Did he even make it?
No, Julian Surveyor didn't.
Oh, but my word.
That will be addressed in future podcasts.
That will be addressed.
Here and now, Kieran Reid versus Sean O'Brien. I would personally vote for Kieran Reid.
Sean O'Brien was my choice.
But then last week you did concede that you wished you'd picked Kieran Reid.
I was going to say, I'm man enough to say I think I know when I'm beaten, and I think all round Kieran Reid would come on top.
Yeah. This game starts and ends with the scrimmage. I'm sure it does.
So our semi-finalists are...
Kean Healy, Manu Tuilagi, Sergio Parise and Kieran Reid. Two back rows, one front row, one centre.
So it's going to be number one. It's going to be Manu Tuilagi against Kieran Reid, and Kean Healy against Sergio Parise.
Ooh, exciting!
Wowzers, that's a pretty tidy semi-final there. There we go. We'll talk about that one next week. You can have your say on who you think should come out on top in those matchups. And yes, you can carry on whinging about the players that weren't included in this original draw.
I will do.
We will address that in future podcasts. There we go. Right, that's our one man 15 dealt with. A couple of quick stories from the world of rugby. And well, we mentioned Brian O'Driscoll in that. He missed out in that little matchup there against Manu Tuilagi, but he's been signed by BT Sport for the forthcoming rugby season.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's a good acquisition for them, you'd have to say.
Yeah, I think so. Every time I've heard Brian O'Driscoll talk, he's seems
I wonder if they'll use
quite
him for
intelligent and articulate and all that.
I wonder if they'll use him for the Aviva or because they've got the new rights to the Pro 12 or 14 or whatever it is now.
I think
they'll just use him for everything.
Do you reckon?
Like they do with it. They just kind of split everyone up, don't
they? Is there anyone else they use like that who hasn't got any experience at all in the Aviva? I don't think there is there?
No, but then again, I think because
they're not saying it matters
because,
that
because
much,
up till now they've only had the Aviva Premiership, they've pretty much had just English people think about their lineup.
Because it's weird, isn't it, having someone commenting who's never played a single game of Aviva. But, you know, it's
just
fine.
Just imagine, I bet Craig Doyle is creaming himself, isn't he? Absolutely just buzzing. His hero.
He's there, handing over to Brian O'Driscoll, playing with his hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Over to you, Brian.
Yeah, you're just going to get like Craig Doyle staring misty-eyed at the screen.
Craig, you're on, sorry, I'm live.
That is good. I think it's a great acquisition. Who else would you have? Like from if this is what I thought. So we've Ireland, you'd sort of go Bod. There you go. You got your man. But if you were going to pick someone Scottish or Welsh to add to the team, there,
I probably wouldn't pick anyone Scottish.
No, I won't pick anyone Scottish.
Maybe Nathan Hines because he's not really Scottish.
Yeah, that's Brendan Laney. He's New Zealander. there's a few, isn't there?
Yeah, Tim Visser,
Sean Maitland.
So
you could have someone
Welsh.
Andy Powell. Get Andy Powell as a pundit, please. That'd be so good.
It'd be a car crash, wouldn't it?
It'd be awesome. It'd be like when ITV got Gazza to the do the Euros.
You can imagine him watching a team he was supporting and they score a try or something. He'd just rip his shirt off and do a big Hulk flex to the camera.
I'll throw a chair through a window.
And then grab one of the assistant girls and...
Who else... Is there any other horrors? I mean, there's loads of horrors from Wales, but horrors.
Big Gav
would be a disaster.
He's not really charismatic, is he?
No, he's not.
Do you ever see him on...
The Bachelor.
No, Soccer... what's it called? Soccer AM.
No, never.
He was the guest there. It wasn't good. He's quite introvert.
Maybe we should look up some...
Arrogant and introvert. It's a terrible combination.
We should look up some footage from that for a future podcast.
We definitely should.
Well, there you go. That's another little bit of homework assignment for you. We want your sort of dream cast of pundits that haven't been recruited as pundits yet after Bod has been called up. We can totally understand the Bod one. Any more at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. The other story, let's just touch on this because I think we should wait until the story unfolds before we sort of pass too much comment on it. But unbelievable what's happened with Clermont Auvergne in their pre-season.
This is horrible. I mean, this is quite sinister, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do we know so far? Because we've got to be very careful. This story only came out about 5 hours ago.
Yeah, not long ago. It happened last night as we record.
So what we understand is that three of the Clermont team went out, and we don't know if they're with Clermont, with a friend. I mean, I guess they're in pre-season or something.
They're in a pre-season camp in kind of, not wilderness, but out in the sticks somewhere in the south of France, and they went out to a nightclub. They went out drinking in this town that they're in, and on the way back they were attacked by a dozen men with machetes, is the way it's been described. So it's Benjamin Kayser, Julien Pierre, Aurélien Rougerie, who are three French internationals, and they've been taken to hospital having surgery for what has been described as deep cuts.
It's a horrific story, but it's just kind of breaking as we record this. We thought we'd flag it up because it's definitely one to watch, and I think there'll be more to run on that one. So we'll move on from that absolutely horrific story and then try and do something that's a little bit light-hearted, shall we?
Yeah, let's give that a go. Let's give that a go now we're all depressed.
Because JB, back off of his scouting mission in Italy, which was covertly disguised as a honeymoon, he's been checking on Treviso and the like. He came back suggesting that we suggest some rugby movies, and we are in the period of summer blockbuster movies.
Indeed. And the only rugby one I know there's two, actually. I can't remember the second one, but the only one I can think of off the top of my head was Samantha Jenness in Up and Under.
I suppose, loosely speaking, you could say that Invictus is a rugby movie, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And Alive as well. It's kind of very, very tenuous.
Yeah. It's Alive rugby based.
Well, they were Uruguayan
rugby team.
Rugby
were they really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I play with a South African fella at Broughton Park who described Invictus as a movie about terrorists. So, probably why he's over here.
Wow.
The other one that could be happening in future was the life story of Gareth Thomas with Mickey Rourke.
That's fallen through.
Is this a joke?
No, serious.
It was definitely happening at one stage, but now it's
Wow.
Might not or isn't happening.
Wow. So this, you could take this genuinely or you could take it in a light-hearted fashion. We want your rugby film ideas. You can pitch the ideas to us, and then through the Egg Chasers, we'll have a profit share. We've got contacts in the know. I'm in the media, and we've got our contacts. We can make these movies happen.
I've got a high definition camera.
Well, there you go. So we've got the means to make it happen. We'll have a profit share agreement between you and the three of us, and then we'll make it happen. Rugby films. What could you have a rugby movie about? JB, do you want to kick off?
All right. Okay. Well, I've had lots of thoughts, but the best one I've thought of so far is a film called Let the Boys Play.
Right. Okay.
So the basic premise of Let the Boys Play is it's a romantic comedy starring Tom Cruise and Emma Stone. Tom Cruise plays the character of Steve Walsh, and Emma Stone, an upcoming female referee. And they're both considered to be the best of a generation. And I thought, like probably my best scene would be they're in, like, a coaching course. Now, you've got to accept a couple of premises here, which is I think Steve Walsh and Nigel Owens are fairly similar ages. But just for the purpose of this film, we want a young Steve Walsh and Nigel Owens as he is now. So Nigel Owens is, like, the wise guy who'd been there, done that before. And he's holding a coaching seminar, and all the best refs are invited. And this is just, like, one of the opening scenes. And he says, what do you see in this picture? And you've got Steve Walsh there, like, chewing gum, maybe got, like, a toothpick in, something like that. You know, being really cool.
He's a maverick.
Yeah, well, this is a really strange thing, right? Because this is the only film where the maverick strictly adheres to rules. So that's why it's very, very special. So I think they kind of... Nigel Owens gets up his picture and says, what do you see here? It's a clear technical infringement. And I think one of them goes, well, actually, that's rule 27, subsection B, not letting the player up. And then the other girl stands up going, well, that's obviously predicated by rule 28F. And they kind of get closer and closer and closer into some tension. And then in the end, Nigel Owens goes, right, you two, enough, sit down. That kind of thing.
I love it.
Yeah, I think it's got...
I love it. They've got a kiss at some point, haven't they?
Yeah,
they've got to get it on.
Well, I think what would probably
maybe
happen...
Maybe at half-time in a big game?
No, I think...
She'll relieve some pressure for him. She'll just meander down his body, and then you'll just see the top of her head disappear out of shot.
Well, I've actually thought of this, and I've thought there needs to be some kind of romantic connection here. So I think they do like they always fall out in romantic comedies. Well, they fall out because they've both got the top of the tree, and it's like a Heineken Cup game or something like that. And Steve Walsh is a touch judge, and she's been appointed video ref, and they're both trying to give Wayne Barnes information. And, like, she's giving him one thing, and they're trying to, like, outdo each other, and Wayne Barnes just has an absolute nightmare and a mental breakdown, collapses. And then they're just sent off into the rugby wilderness where they have to kind of...
Wow.
Yeah.
You've really thought that one through.
Yeah, I've also sorry, just one last one. I also really want to put in a montage. Do you have them, like, working out, being great refs? So, like, pulling their cards out, quick draw on the whistles.
Writing players' names down.
Yeah. Like, maybe someone holds up a picture and they've got to go, Ruck! More! Infringement!
I love it. I love it. I'll go to Phil then. Your idea of a rugby film.
I'm not actually prepared for one.
Oh, no, well, I'll kick off then. So I've got loads, and I took mine with a slightly different approach. I've got, I've got one called Pitbull about Brian Moore, and it's a barrister by day, but this man is not afraid to use his knowledge of the dark arts to get results. Even if he annoys everyone around him up, it's just about getting results.
Can I ask, right, is this like a Superman thing where... Like, his only disguise for his day job is that he wears glasses. Yes. And no one in the office realises he's the England hooker.
I like that.
Glasses and a suit. And under his suit at all times, he has a full kit on.
I mean, maybe he waxes his hair. He's never had hair, but maybe he does something to it.
Well, what about...
No, he doesn't have tape around his head. That's the giveaway, isn't it?
I thought Johnny Wilkinson could just be in a film called Johnny. And what was that film with Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman where it's slightly autistic?
Rain Man.
Maybe Johnny Wilkinson in a kind of Rain Man fashion.
I'd call it Metronome.
Looking after his brother.
Or
would it be a film about Mark Wilkinson fetching balls? How was it with the kicking?
Or you could have Johnny Wilkinson in a reboot of Johnny English. Like, instead of Rowan Atkinson, you have Johnny Wilkinson as a spy. A bumbling spy.
The worst spy ever.
Or he'd just be a very quiet, well-mannered spy. He didn't break any rules. But then also I thought you could go Dumb and Dumber with Andy Powell and Gavin Henson.
Nice.
I thought that would work quite
well.
That
would be, great team.
And then I just got a bit silly and went Lawrence of Arabia and Lawrence Dallaglio in an adult adaptation of the classic story. Wayne Barnes and Stuart Barnes are twins in an Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito style.
That's a difficult. Yeah, we mentioned that one before, and that's a difficult one because in twins, there's one clearly superior twin and one clearly inferior twin. Yeah.
Well, it's just big and small, isn't it? Oh, I suppose Danny
DeVito's
short.
No, Danny DeVito is a disaster.
Yeah, he's a disaster.
Whereas, okay, Stuart Barnes is a disaster. Well, they're both disasters for a start. But one of them actually played international rugby, I think. Whilst the other one could only be a ref. Yeah. So, you know, which way?
It's got limitations. It's got Fight Club with Chris Ashton and Manu Tuilagi.
Nice.
Or Carl Ferns and Gavin Henson.
Or Cipriani and Lucy.
Oh, yeah, Cipriani. Great shout. We need a film for the Honey Badger. I couldn't think like a rugby player who's trying to launch a secret career as a stand-up comedian, maybe going to... But then I couldn't think... So we need one for the Honey Badger.
Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, yeah.
He's nice. In the outback.
Honey Badger Dundee.
Yeah.
No, maybe not.
I think I quite like one. Something along the lines of like Gavin Henson has turned his back on rugby because of all the pressure. He's gone somewhere like, I don't know, New Zealand or somewhere just to be a school teacher and he wears tweed and stuff and no one knows who he is. But like he gets discovered because like a ball comes his way and he's like, his spider sense, he just catches it and spirals it back. And I was like, who is this guy? And then eventually he works his way back into rugby for one last game.
Fab.
That's what I'm thinking.
What about like some sort of Zulu type film where it's just the colonising English forces in Namibia just being taken down by one man, Jacques Burger.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So there we go. There's a little starting point. Start for 10. If you've got any suggestions, rugby movies that we could make. Oh, Rudy Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know what it would be. It's just a title.
Working title at the moment.
Yeah, working title.
It's like, is it like Face Off where they came up with the movie first, the name of the movie,
and
they built it around?
Clearly.
Because I want to see when Nigel Owens goes up to Tom Cruise and goes, the secret is just let the boys play. That's an idea. You've got to get the name of the movie in it.
Into the movie.
Yeah.
Rugby Podcast on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast. Come and give us your movie pitch and we will take it to the big bosses, the movie execs. And there we go. Could be next summer's rugby-based blockbuster.
Oh, it will be.
But we move up to a club close-up then. We've been running the rule over some of the Aviva Premiership clubs. We will get to some other sides as well. But we know the Aviva Premiership better than anything else, really. So we're focusing on that. And we're trying to just decide how we think teams are getting on in their recruitment, how they're shaping up for the season, and how we think they're going to do today. Exeter and Bath. And we're going to start with Exeter Chiefs. So they've done a little bit of business, haven't they?
Well, I suppose a big signing, if you like, is Thomas Waldron. Doesn't excite me too much.
No, I'm not. Rob Baxter's a shrewd guy. So I think when I look at Thomas Waldron, he hasn't signed him as a, there's our starting number eight. He's signed him as a quality depth player, someone that can come off the bench for a little bit of 20-minute cameo, or because they've got to balance two competitions. That's where they struggle. That's what's dropped them back down again.
Yeah, they're not in the senior competition, though, are they? That's
no,
the thing.
Not.
So they could have done with him this year. I understand that for this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, how long has Thomas Waldron got left? 3-4 years? Well, or 3 years.
He's on a 3-year deal. I think he's 31.
Mm.
So he's got a few good years left.
Yeah.
It's whether they play like with him and Dave Ewers at 6 and 8, do something like that.
I don't know. Dave Ewers is too good.
Ben White had a good season though at 6 last year, and Tom Johnson's come back in more regularly. And so I think it's about depth of squad for that reason. I look at Exeter and I think this is the year where their young players will start to shine. And I think Rob Baxter's banking on it.
Have to shine. It's not will they shine. They have to.
Guys like Sam Hill and Luke Cowan-Dickie, Henry Slade.
Yeah, Henry Slade, definitely. Jack Knoll.
Absolutely.
When he's back fit.
They've signed a guy, I think, was he there last year or was he just coming over? Adam Hughes. He used to play at Dragons. Apparently, he's very, very good. He's really one to watch. The problem with young players is sometimes they don't become as good as you think. And I just wonder if they'll take actually a bit of a step back.
I think it's going to be tough for them. I think it's going to be tough. Interesting, just on the Jack Knoll subject, there's lots of talk that he's going to be pretty much nailed on fullback.
As opposed
to on the wing, yeah.
Didn't they play him at fullback towards the end of the season?
Yeah. I don't know what you reckon, guys, but I think with Exeter, they're operating on a budget. They're a profitable company. They're posting profits every year, which only a few clubs are. They're faced with a situation where some clubs pockets are a little bit deeper. And with every kind of year, they're being exposed a little bit more. They're having to squeeze value out of young players or jobbing players a little bit more, and it's getting harder and harder. They have got Ryan Caldwell at lock from Bath as well.
Any good?
The Ireland international. Yeah, he's a decent player.
They've just lost Dean Mum, though, for the start of the season, haven't they?
Yeah,
only
they have.
First six games he should be back.
Right, because he's having shoulder surgery, isn't he?
Yeah.
But that's a big loss.
Involves a few cranes, I imagine.
I don't see them getting into the top six again. I see them ninth, tenth, maybe.
I think they'll be down there.
Well, who knows? I mean, they don't have the Heineken Cups to deal with. So they're not really going to care about playing in the European games. They might pick up a game, you know, a group with Roma in it or someone like that. I think they'll do better than this season, but I'm not sure they're going to be top six.
Well, let's move on to Bath then. Now, Bath, well, they had that painful way of going out of the top four.
Yeah.
And blew it.
The worst way to do it.
Completely blew it.
Yeah.
They had such expectations. They've had a massive outlay of money. They've got some, once again, pretty great signings that have been made.
They've not made too many signings.
And some of them, we'll have to wait and see how they'll actually... Sam Burgess, for example.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, on Wikipedia, Sam Burgess has been listed as number eight.
Really? Oh, wow.
Wikipedia? Now, that could just be Wikipedia. So
did Phil write it?
I would put him down as second row.
That's because you're mental.
So it's interesting. We don't know. That's one thing, because the physical attributes of Sam Burgess are pretty phenomenal, but where is he going to play? It's just interesting that, it's as much as you can read into it, but he's been listed as a number eight.
Yeah. I won't read into that too much.
Their pack is awesome.
It's amazing. I'm wondering whether Matt Garvey might get some time at lock, because I'm looking at their back row and it's stacked.
But then their locks, because you've got Atwood and Hooper.
Atwood, Hooper with Day.
Hooper's captain again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a hell of a team.
Burgess competing in the end.
They've got to win it. They've got to win it this year.
I think they'll definitely get top four this year.
They just don't seem to be quite fluid enough. I think the backs are exciting but weak, if that makes sense. Flaky.
And this is where we disagreed in a previous podcast. This is where I said I think signings like Luke Arscott are really quite shrewd, because there's a guy that's not going to be flaky. You just want to solidify things a little bit. Luke Arscott will catch everything. He'll kick well, and he won't make any mistakes. And I think Bath could do with that kind of guy, a little bit more robust.
I'm fascinated to know what's going to happen to Sam Burgess.
I think we all think they're going to make top four then.
Do we know anyone who's a professional rugby player who might be able to help us out and tell us where is he training?
Who?
Sam Burgess.
Well,
is he here yet?
No, October he arrives. The NRL still
people
ongoing.
Of Bath, get down there too. I don't know. No, they're not at that old. It used to be on the road out. Just
didn't it? Yeah.
It used to be on the road out. I can't remember. Lambridge, it was called. That was it. It was a horrible training ground.
It's now in a stately home, Tim.
Yeah, it's a stately home now. It's lovely. Different times. But if you can spy on the camp and tell us where Sam Burgess is doing his training, please do.
God, that's a good team, isn't it?
Just one thing with Bath, an area of weakness that cost them last year was hooker, when they had both Rob Webber and Ross Batty injured, and they're having like third and fourth choice hooker. And they've not brought anyone in. They've not strengthened their hooker.
No, they haven't. Maybe they've got some kid which they quite like.
They've got a guy in their academy called Tom Dunn, and they've got Tom Wollstonecroft in their academy, two hookers. But
right, yeah. It's not... If it comes down to it again at a key time of the season where they've got injuries.
I think the biggest problem might well be scrum half, because Peter Stringer isn't going to last forever. He's doing a great job, but he's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
He might do, actually. He's in such good shape. I mean, if there's a player that really, really looks after himself, it's Peter Stringer. But he's getting on. Mickey Youngs, no thank you.
Chris Cook,
they've got rid of the Welsh fella.
Martin Roberts.
He must have left because he's not on their
down
team.
The
so maybe the addition of...
Martin Roberts has gone to Ospreys.
Will Genya.
Yeah.
I mean, they've already said they've agreed signings for after the World Cup.
Yeah.
But Will Genya...
Will Genya refuted to be one of them.
Yeah, well, you know, that's pretty ambitious for Will Genya, thinking he's going to make the World Cup.
Well, yeah.
So, but, you know, maybe a fit Will Genya playing in his prime would be awesome for Bath. That would put them over the top, I think.
Right, well, normally at this stage we'd say what position we'd put these teams in for next season.
Mm-hmm.
But with JU ruining everything and not refusing to pick Welsh and Falcons and...
Right, OK, fine. So I'll go back to that and say Falcons relegated, Welsh not relegated.
Yeah. Okay, so Exeter.
I'm going 10th.
10th?
Wow.
I think they'll be down there. I think they'll be 9th or 10th.
They could be my horror team, to be fair.
They could be.
I'm going 9th for them.
9th for Exeter.
I want to put Bath at first.
Bath first? Yeah. Ahead of Leicester, ahead of Saracens?
They're so powerful. And so much potential as well. They're good with potential.
I completely agree with Exeter. They'll be 9th or 10th, so we can agree on one of those positions. Bath, definitely top four. I can't see them getting first. I can't see them getting second or third either. I think
Sarries or Saints. I'm going to go fourth.
I think fourth as well.
Why don't we aggregate it? As I'm saying third or fourth, you're going fourth, and JB's going first. We just go third.
Okay, Bath third.
Done.
And Exeter, I'll say 10th.
So currently our table is shaping up with
Northampton in second place, Bath in third, Quins fifth, Wasps seventh, Sale eighth, Exeter 10th, London Welsh 11th, and Newcastle getting relegated.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle. You can almost fit in the other pieces now, can't you? We'll get to a couple more teams next time.
Now, you might have noticed that there's no fan free agency. So just to let you know why there's no fan free agency, it's because I've got fans, but they've not sent me their pitches yet. So I need fan free agency pitches, please, for any professional team or amateur team that you possibly could ever write about.
And if you haven't heard previous podcasts, let me just briefly explain. Phil is the first year where he's not playing rugby with his beloved and one team that he's played for, Sedgley Park, well, apart from university and whatever.
Yes.
Anyway, so Sedgley Park, he's no longer playing for the first team at Sedgley, so now he's looking up and looking around and going, what do I do now? And one thing he's never done is support a team, because he's always been playing right up to championship level. So we're looking for teams that Phil could support. He will, if it's a good enough pitch that you put forward, be it the great beers you have and the atmosphere at your ground, the brilliant stadium, the history your club's got, or whatever you want, the brilliant stash.
Yeah. Yeah, that could definitely swing it.
So whatever the reason is, if you make a good pitch, Phil will put it on his shortlist, and by the start of the season, Phil will be supporting another team, and that will mean your team gets mentioned loads on the podcast. It means we will come there on force, we will do podcasts from your ground, and that's how it will go. So get in touch with us on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and then we will talk about it next time. And like JB says, and he's bearing in mind he's had a wedding and a honeymoon, he hasn't had that much time to chase things up.
No.
There are loads of people getting in touch saying, I'd like to do one. But
I am fascinated to hear from someone that supports Newcastle Falcons how you actually do it.
So can I just apologise to people in Newcastle and say that Phil and I have absolutely no hard feelings whatsoever. The only issue I have with Newcastle is that horrible Gilbert Fleece that Dean Richards wore.
Remove my eyes, it's easier.
So at Rugby Podcast, and that's another pod.
Done.
Dusted. What have you got on this week, JB?
What have I got on? Lots of work. Nothing exciting, unfortunately. Oh!
Commonwealth Games side. We haven't even mentioned Commonwealth Games.
Sevens.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want to get an interview with the Cook Island boys. I think they'd be interesting. Not media trained in the slightest.
Yeah. But they'll be very busy, because they'll also be doing javelin, 100 metres, marathon.
Swimming. Yeah, it's impressive. A nation of six puts out a sevens team.
Good luck to the home unions involved in the Commonwealth Games.
And good luck to Cook Islands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go, Cook Islands.
Let's go, Cook Islands. What are you doing, Phil?
Down to London for a couple of days, back up in Yorkshire on Wednesday.
Yorkshire?
Yeah, Ilkley.
What are you doing there?
Head office. Meetings.
Oh, you're not going to race Greyhound.
We should possibly mention that the guys at BT Sport got in touch with us and said, guys, do you want to come to the World Sevens Finals Day with us? Do you want to be our guest at the World Sevens Finals Day, which is at Twickenham? And will be brilliant. There'll be teams from all over the world playing sevens.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What an opportunity.
What an opportunity. And what a lovely, kind, generous offer from the guys at BT Sport to get the Egg Chasers along for a little bit of a pre-season catch-up.
Well, a top broadcaster.
JB said yes. I said yes. Phil?
Well, my selfish girlfriend decided to be born on the same day as the Sevens tournament, so unfortunately I can't go.
Well, you can go, can't you?
Well, you can go. Not really.
Couldn't you just do it the day before? Because the Sunday's a rubbish time to do stuff for a birthday anyway, because you've got to...
Exactly. She doesn't appreciate you anyway.
Is it on the Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, I might be able to come then.
Oh, yes! There you go, Claire.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks for letting go. We'll get a handwritten letter by Claire.
That's
giving
a verbal contract. Right.
Please
there,
return Phil by 8 o'clock. He does not have permission. Oh, you can stay down there. Yes, this works well, actually.
Yeah,
brilliant.
I could stay down.
Right. Well, that's something that's on the agenda. We've got plenty more on the agenda, and get in touch with anything you've heard today or other ideas that you want us to talk about, and we could do it next time in a bit. Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
Nice one, JB.
Bye.
Later.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.